This is a Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. I'm your host. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, an all-around functional dude, and sometimes apparently a paladin. That's a very long story. I am bringing back the panel this week, and I've asked a bunch of people to come on and talk a bunch of different things. I've already rolled initiative for them, so I'm going to go down in order. Anthony, why don't you go ahead and go first and tell people who you are and what you do?
Oh, hey, I'm Anthony Vecino. I write over at onelazyrobotblog.com. My debut novel, Time Heist, came out last November. It's a cyberpunk thriller type thing in the vein of, you know, Neuromancer, because I just got the memo that cyberpunk's dead, so... but yeah, if you want to reach me on Twitter, I'm at Anthony Vecino, V-I-C-I-N-O. I'd love to chat with you. So,
and what are you doing for SF Signal?
I write the occasional article, do some reviews and interviews and stuff like that.
Very cool. Did you bring DiNardo bagels?
I did. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Definitely. That's how you get through the front door. You bring bagels.
That's how you do it. Second up is Gail.
Hi, my name is Gail Carriger, and I write steampunk, young adult, and adult books, and generally not as quickly as I should. that's about it. Hi, everyone.
And Gail, just to throw it out there, I got to see you at Worldcon.
Yes, it was great.
That was like the first time you've been out in a while, so that was awesome.
Yeah.
But I did not get to give you tea, which I was trying desperately to give you some Lipton cold brew iced tea.
I was saved from that offensive gesture.
I wanted to leave it in the green room for you, too. I thought that'd
be... I was barely in the green room. I only had one day of programming this year, and I pretty much moved very quickly on that one day since the programming was all day long.
I went in there twice very early on and actually did interviews in there because it was the only place I could find.
That's smart.
Yeah.
It was pretty quiet in there.
At first, but then as the con grew and more people started showing up, it got very loud in there.
Yeah.
So, next up is Alvaro.
Hi, my name is Alvaro Zainas Amaro. I write science fiction and a little bit of horror. I have a book out with Robert Silverberg called When the Blue Shift Comes, which is part of the Mike Resnick edited Stellar Guild series, which pairs well-established authors with up-and-comers. And I'm currently working on a book of conversations or interviews with Robert Silverberg, which is going to be coming out next year from Fairwood Press.
Well, I got to ride in an elevator with Robert Silverberg, so there.
I get yelled at if that's any use.
I was on a panel with Robert Silverberg.
I got to tease John DiNardo about Robert Silverberg.
I don't know if any of this is going to make it into the book. It's good stuff. And I'll say, since I was at the Worldcon too, and I was in the green room, that I was one of the hapless folks that was, you know, looking for a familiar face in a sea of unfamiliar faces.
That was
there are actually
funny.
Three people there, but
that was funny.
I saw Patrick, and he seemed very, very raptly devoted to the conversation he was having with some other individual at a table. So I sort of slinked over there, and then he started with these frantic hand signals like, no, like, get out, leave me alone. That was one of the interviews that he was conducting that I almost crashed.
It was funny because as soon as I saw him, he looked at me and I put my finger over my lips like, you know, shh.
I'm like, is that code for...
And he goes over and he gets like something to drink and everything. And I'm talking to Jeremiah Tolbert and as we're talking, because I've known Jeremiah forever, and we're just kind of chatting. And then I'm watching Alvaro kind of make his way, you know, through the buffet line thing or whatever they want to call it, where
so
they've got
stealthy.
All the stuff. And then he gets whatever it is, and he starts slowly walking towards me, and I lift my finger again to my lips. I'm like, shh, no, no. And finally, I think about, what, maybe 7 feet away, you figured it out.
Yeah, you're being generous. I was pretty much in your face. I was like, what's up, dude?
It was funny. It was funny. Paul, do you have something you want to say?
No.
What did you put your hand up for?
That was from before.
That was from before?
When we were trying to explain the whole hand signal.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I never did that. So anyway, Paul, why don't you tell people who you are and what you do?
Hi, I'm Paul Waymer. I'm a reviewer, writer, gamer, and podcaster. I do stuff for SF Signal. I'm a co-host on Skiffy and Fanti. I do lots of stuff for SF Audio, and you can find me perpetually on Twitter.
Did you like those pictures I sent you?
I did. Nice little macro photography.
Mm-hmm. And also the ones I sent you from Worldcon.
Yes, I appreciate it, especially the waterfall in the area around the park.
That was really neat. I posted the pictures. There was a Vietnam War Memorial, And I posted those pictures also on Facebook, and a guy actually messaged me and said that his father's name is on that memorial.
Oh, wow, neat.
And so I was telling him someone was going through with either white chalk or crayon or something and filling in the names so they stood out more, which I thought was kind of neat.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, Sarah.
Yes.
Hi, Sarah.
Yep. Hi.
you're fostering the next generation.
Oh, I'm doing something, that's for sure. So I'm Sarah. I write book reviews on bookwormblues.net. And when I'm not having a baby, I run the column Special Needs and Strange Worlds on SF Signal.
Very cool. And getting a lot of sleep lately?
God, no. It's killing me. Getting like 3 hours a night, I feel like a zombie.
Aww.
On a completely unrelated note, Sarah, tomorrow morning, 7:45 a.m., I've got a roof inspector coming out.
Oh, I'm super excited for you. Yeah. I'm probably going to be changing a poopy diaper.
Well, I just wanted to let you know, there is no cell antenna on my roof.
Well, there's not one on mine anymore either. So that was fun.
I bet it was.
Yeah, it was great.
So last but certainly not least, returning from a whirlwind tour of the world is Stina.
Hi, I'm Stina Light. I write science fiction and fantasy. I've got a book out that just came out this summer called Cold Iron. It's a flintlock fantasy. Yoo-hoo! I have a website, mm-hmm. cslight.com.
Do you want to spell
I'm on
light?
Twitter. Oh, light is spelled L-E-I-C-H-T. It's German.
And you did a little bit of traveling not too long ago.
Yes, I did. I went to New York, and then I went to London, and Belfast, and Derry, and Belfast, and Dublin, and Cambridge, and New York, and then home.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, I saw some of the pictures you were posting. They were so cool.
Oh, thank you. It was the trip of a lifetime, and many, 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 many thanks to Carrie Sparing, who's an awesome human being,
yes,
and Ian McDonald, who is also one of the most amazing, awesome people on the planet.
And he thinks I'm obsessed with whether or not he's wearing underwear, and that's just...
Well, I mean, are you?
Well, he wore the kilt the one time, and I was just wondering if he was doing it traditionally or not. And
you actually asked him?
I did.
Turned out he was doing it non-traditionally.
Well, he just felt that I was a little bit too interested in whether or not he was doing it traditionally. And he's also the one, and we're going to talk a little bit about Worldcon here in a second. I showed up for Worldcon, and the very first person, Stina will love this, the very first person I see is Gareth.
Oh.
And yeah. So Gareth and I had become friends thanks to essentially Stina knowing him and kind of introducing him around to everybody. And so that's how I got to know him. And so he's the first person I see, and we had this great chat. But I told him about my experiences with Ian. When I interviewed him, I basically we were talking, and I told him, you know, he was talking about being Irish and this and that. And I said, well, you know, I'm Irish too. Well, I'm half Irish on my dad's side, and on my mom's side, I'm hillbilly. So I'm an Irish hillbilly. And he said, well, what the fuck's the difference?
That sounds like Ian.
And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, well, you know, the Irish are the hillbillies of Europe. I told Gareth that, and I thought he was going to pee himself. He laughed so hard.
God, I love him so much.
So, anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about Worldcon, because several of us were at Worldcon. Several of us have some opinions about Worldcon and the Hugos and all that kind of good stuff. Who would like to talk a little bit about Worldcon? Gail, you want to talk about your Worldcon experience?
Sure.
Because you only went for the one day.
I technically only went for the one day. I was actually there for most of it, but I only wanted to tell programming I was there for one day. They tend to give me a lot of programming. I think it's because I write in various different genres and, you know, end up on various different tracks And I'm pretty egalitarian about what I'm going to open my big fat mouth about. So they're like, sure, Gail, we'll do that. But so I kind of felt the last Worldcon pretty overworked. So I was like, okay. And I just recently had surgery. So I was like, I can't really do too much. So I'll just do one day. And then, of course, they kind of overbooked me on panels. And I was like, well, I have to do a coffee clutch and I have to do a signing. So I'm So that one day was pretty exhausting. Plus, the aforementioned lack of elevators meant that I was running up to my room in between them like 9 flights. So I got a good workout.
So I actually ended up in the Con Hotel. I was on the 3rd floor.
Yeah, you were on the best floor. I, unfortunately, was not. I was on the 9th floor, which was quiet, but a little challenging to get to during the day.
Well, here's the other thing. I was right by one of the fire exits. The least used one.
Oh, well, it's probably the one I was using.
It was. It was the one that you and I saw each other on.
Right, it was that one.
So that was the one. I was right there. My door was right there.
I was next to the one that was by the pool. But
Anyway, we just kept skipping the elevators.
But I mean, I had a really good time on the days where I wasn't doing anything at all because they weren't really pass checking until the weekend. And so I kind of took it upon myself to take care of a couple people in the dealer's room who didn't have any time relief, and I wasn't wearing a badge, so I kind of nobody really came up to me or anything. So I was sort of like the good old days when I was a fan. So I just kind of explored and sat with friends and chatted, and that was really fun. So I enjoyed that part quite a bit, but it was a little weird not being official. So I think maybe in the future, you know, kind of as a pro thing, I'm just gonna ask to do programming, but limit how much programming they'll put me on each day. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll be my new approach.
Well, there you go.
So yeah.
Now I did have one really bad experience in the dealer room. I was punched.
You were punched? Well, what did you do?
Punched
what?
Or slapped.
Did you deserve it?
I don't know. You have to ask Gail.
I believe you are ignoring me, in which case you absolutely deserve it.
I wasn't. I was talking to Michael Underwood, and all of a sudden I get hit, and I turn, and it's you, and you're running away.
That's fair play.
She wasn't official at the time, so it doesn't really...
Exactly. Yeah. She wasn't. Yeah. She was sitting at the locust table, I believe.
Yeah, I'm usually at the locust table. Shh, don't tell anybody. The thing about the locust table, it's kind of like the Cepwa table. Everybody ends up coming to you. Mm-hmm. So if you just sit there long enough, you'll see everybody you want to see, really.
Or the lobby.
Or the lobby, yeah.
Except this year, there was like 12 lobbies.
Yeah, that was a little... Although we figured out the bar pretty quick.
Well, that was actually... That was because Alvaro, Rebecca, and I conspired to make that bar the bar.
I don't think it was you, Patrick.
No, we were.
You think so, but about 20 people were conspiring to make that bar that.
Well,
a handful of whom I'm pretty sure do not know you, but everybody was like, this is going to be the bar. And frankly, I was on board because they had the best champagne. So I was like, great, that's the bar.
Alvaro.
I will say that to the point of the locust table being sort of a hub of authors, et cetera, people in science fiction. Rebecca, my girlfriend, who spent a fair amount of the con helping out at the locust table, has access to a lot of these people because they just show up. And early on in the con, we decided that that was going to be the bar con, and she disseminated that message very effectively through the locust table. But that's also a secret.
I'll just
put that out there.
Yeah. Alvaro, how was your Worldcon?
It was good. It was a lot of fun. I was on, I think, 4 panels. I had a reading and I had a cafe clutch. I was nervous that no one would show up to the reading because it was like at the opening time of the con. I think it was 1 p.m. on Wednesday, and the con started officially at what, just an hour or two earlier. And I was up against Elliot Debodar and a couple of other, you know, popular authors who had readings at the exact same time. But I was happy that a handful of people showed up, including one weird guy who kept like tweeting during the whole reading.
Oh, that's always weird and uncomfortable when people do that.
I wonder who he could mean.
Yeah. I kept seeing my phone buzz and flash. I'm like,
if we find out who it is, we'll just keep it under our hat, right, Patrick?
Exactly.
Yeah. If you ever find that out, Patrick, just make sure. Just send me an email. But yeah, it was good, and I got to meet a bunch of, you know, for me, one of the favorite, my favorite parts of, or aspects of WorldCon is getting to meet and interact live with people that I've either met online or have never met at all, and that was certainly a lot of fun, so I had a blast.
And you read a story about Moriarty.
That's true.
That was a great story.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it. It's coming out in the Mammoth Book of Professor Moriarty Adventures later in the year.
It was a great story, folks, and you should really go check it out. I was very impressed, and you even had math in it.
I did have math. I like math.
Sweet. It's a little known fact that I'm a huge Sherlock Holmes fan.
Well, you would like this. What was it called? Reichenbach?
That is a good shorter version of the actual title.
How do you spell that?
Reichenbach, the falls where...
Give him the whole title!
Well, now that you've given this such an appropriate shortcut, the real title of the story is As Falls Reichenbach, So Falls Reichenbach Falls.
Yes.
Yeah, that was quite a bit shorter.
But it was awesome. It was a great story. I really enjoyed it. And you guys know I struggle sometimes with short stories, but that one was great. So I highly recommend it. Go check it out.
That's cool. I'm going to check it out. Yeah, my dog was named Mycroft. Everyone kept asking me, why did you name your dog after Microsoft? No! Mycroft!
Microsoft Holmes. That would be an interesting one.
Ugh. Mycroft Holmes the third. Because there is, you know, because Moon is a harsh mistress. That's Mycroft the second.
There you go. Well, I also did a couple of panels and a reading, and I didn't think anybody would show up for any of them. Alvaro showed up for the reading, which I was ridiculously nervous for, and almost barfed twice.
You did a good job, except for that part where you looked at me. You're like, what?
My reading ended up being audience participation and interaction because I kept calling out people in the audience and asking them questions, like, "Does this suck? Or is this going okay? What do you think?" You know, kind of stuff. I was on a panel with James Bacon and a couple of other people, and the other people didn't show up, so it was just me and him talking about comic books.
That's awesome. Hey, I want to be there.
And that was before he won a Hugo. And it was funny because I said I was a two-time Hugo Award winner, so I know about sequels. And he kind of laughed, and he says, well, I only have the one. And then afterwards, I said, now we're even. Now you know about sequels. And he got this big grin on his face. So that was kind of cool. Yeah. So I had pretty much a good con. I wish I could have gone outside.
Yeah, I saw some of the pictures of the hellscape.
Yes.
That was earlier. Yeah, exactly.
At one point I looked up and I did go outside to do a couple of interviews right outside the green room, not realizing that they would lock the door and you couldn't get back in. But and you were on this giant pyramid kind of thing. But I looked up and Beth Cato was with me and I said, wow, the sun was red. It was just red. And I said, wow, I wonder how many stories are going to be written about people under red suns this weekend.
It was a very Jack Vance-inspired con.
I guess, yeah.
It was tough because the party hotel was, I don't know, three quarters of a mile away.
Well, it was at the Davenport. You just had to go to the Davenport.
We're not doing that anymore, Patrick. You can stop.
Anyway, and you couldn't walk there. You had to take the shuttle. I mean, they had a good, consistent running shuttle going, but I always prefer to walk if I can, and so that was a little sad because there was so much ash in the air, you just couldn't go. But there's nothing we can do about that.
Correct. But I did like that people would say, oh, we're going to meet you at the Davenport. And you're like, okay. And apparently there's four. Because there's the Grand, there's the Historic, there's the Tower, and I forget what I guess the other one was Isengard. I don't know.
God.
So that was kind of a trip. Great food locally. I loved the downtown area. I loved the giant radio flyer wagon with the slide. The park was really neat. They were doing the Taming of the Shrew Montana style, so it was like a saloon. I don't know. That was kind of strange. For Stina, did not go to WorldCon?
No, I did not.
Did you pay attention to any of the stuff online about it?
Oh, yes, I did.
You did?
Yes, I
did. Was there any good stuff that you liked?
I liked the fact... All right, so I'm just going to say up front that leading up to the awards, I was feeling very... very nervous about everything because I just find it, I don't know how to talk about this without.
Well, let me throw something out there for you. So I was finally able to articulate how I was feeling over on Functional Nerds with John and Elio.
Yeah.
And essentially I told him, I said, I feel like the child going through a horrible divorce.
I could see that. I felt though that it was, without it being, because I felt like I just felt like I was the target. I felt like I was one of the targets, okay? Because I'm female, because I'm a feminist, because I enjoy writing science fiction and fantasy, and I've been known to write gay characters, and I have stories with trans characters in them, and they might not be published right now, but I do. I really felt, I don't know, for me, science fiction has always been, because my introduction to it was Star Trek. And my earliest memory, one of my earliest memories, I'm not making this up, is the interracial kiss scene, okay?
Between Uhura and Kirk.
Yes, that's one of my earliest memories. It was just such a huge deal, and from that moment, I said to myself, I wanted to be a part of science fiction and fantasy because it was helping to make the world a better place. It was helping, and I look at all of the things that I enjoy. I've always enjoyed reading fiction that contains interesting thoughts about society and what's going on at that time. And I've always been fascinated, you know, A Clockwork Orange. I mean, all of that stuff has always attracted me because it allowed me to think about things, and it posed questions about things that may not always have made me feel comfortable, mind you. But I feel like that is an important part of growing as a human being and exploring and learning. And here there was this group of people who was taking everything that I loved and enjoyed about science fiction and fantasy and telling me that it was wrong, but that it didn't belong, and that pissed me off.
But why are you conflating this love of sci-fi and all that it entails with the Hugo Awards? I mean... they're an awards show. They're like no more relevant, frankly, to the genre than the Oscars are to the movie industry. I mean, this is what's confused me about this whole kind of uproar is like, I mean, frankly, the Hugos have always been kind of a bunch of old dudes and slightly old fashioned. Like, well,
I don't know. Maybe you've had a different experience with it. I didn't necessarily feel that way. And I think largely that was because I have been a Campbell nominee twice, and I did feel like I was more welcomed. And then all of a sudden this happened. And then I felt like because I was part of that up and coming crowd that they didn't approve of for whatever reason, it felt very personal. And that's part of the reason why I didn't go, because I didn't feel safe doing so. So
you felt like before you were welcomed and now you were being pushed out.
Exactly. That's what I felt like. And then it just felt like such a huge relief for it not to have gone that way, regardless. I mean, I personally feel the main reason that it did not go the way certain sectors of the community had planned was because people in sci-fi do not like being told what to think or what to do. They just don't.
Well, I think your point about the best science fiction is very valid, which is it's the kind of stories that it makes you examine things without you even realizing that you're examining things.
Exactly. And I think, and here's the deal. I've got a piece that I'm working on right now that's an article that I'm working on that's talking about theme in science fiction has always existed. It's always existed. Whether or not you've noticed is a whole nother story. But it's always existed. And it's something that, it's a literary device. It's always been there. And it's not something that just suddenly showed up in the past 10 years because social justice warriors or whatever. It's always existed. It's something that's taught in freaking literature classes. I mean, if you've never heard of a theme as a literary device, I don't know how you got out of high school. So you don't have to. And the thing, I feel like there's a distinction between something having a theme and something having a theme that's not exactly handled very professionally or, I don't know, well. I feel like if you have to hammer people with your theme, then you aren't doing a good job, I don't feel. Themes should be things that you suggest to the reader. It's something that, it's a question. It's not a statement. It's not, here, I have this question. Are things this way or not? Let's think about this question. Versus a statement that says, this is how things are. That I don't feel like this is how things are is a theme. That's how propaganda works. So, yeah. Anyway.
So, I think you had a great world con.
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. No, you're fine. And you know, let me throw some stuff out there. Gail, you didn't go to the Hugos.
No, I don't go to award shows if I could possibly help it, unless some, you know, slacker of an iced tea drinker insists that I accept his award for him. That's when I go.
Gotcha. And Alvaro, did you guys go?
No, I was actually, I think I was on the same couch, I think, as Gail in the bar during the Hugos.
Gotcha. Yes, we're all sitting, well, some of us watched it intently and the rest of us drank and watched Twitter intently.
And live snarked. Yeah.
So two things. That the bar, the con bar that we overtook was at the Grand.
Yeah.
And I did find it interesting that the TVs in the bar were all tuned to different sports events the first night. And then every night after that, they were all tuned to the SIFI channel, which I thought was funny. Anyway, I did go to the Hugo ceremonies because I had two first World Conners with me, JT and Alicia.
And you wanted to torture them.
And well, I wanted them to get the full experience. And they were both very interested. You know, even with everything going on, they wanted to go. And so I made them dress up.
Good.
Because I dressed up, and I said, you guys, you have to dress up too.
Good.
The things that I didn't like, normally when I've gone there, you just meet a bunch of people in the whatever, in the lobby, in the hallway, if it's in, you know, if it's in the ballroom or something, and you all go in together and grab a bunch of seats, and you're all sitting together watching the Hugos. You couldn't do that because it was ticketed with assigned seating, which was different. So I saw people. But they were like, where do you get tickets? And so it's too late. You know, we've got our tickets. They're getting their tickets, other people. And so you don't know where you're sitting in the theater. You don't know who's sitting next to you except like the people that are immediately with you. So I didn't like that. But I understood why they had to do it, I think, is because it was in this – it was in an actual theater with – you know, the rows of seating and all this kind of stuff. It wasn't like a ballroom like they've done in the past where they just set up seating and they had a big stage. This was in an actual theater. They had people at the door scanning the tickets and telling you which way to go and this and that. So I understood why they did it. I didn't like it. Let's put it that way. And then, you know, I was very nervous the whole time. And I feel like, as Stina said, the fans didn't like what they were being told. And so the fans showed up in droves and voted. I don't know how else to put it. And they kind of took it back.
And I'm glad that they did, frankly. I'm glad that they did. I think it should be more participatory. I don't feel it's right leaving it to a bunch of old dudes, as Gail was saying. I don't think that's okay. I don't. If you have a problem with it being a bunch of old dudes, then you need to do something about it and participate. Throwing your hands up in the air and saying, no, there's nothing I can do, is not the answer. And I know not everybody feels comfortable with that. And that's okay in and of itself. But understand that when you decide that it's about old dudes and there's nothing you can do about it, you've voted for it to be old dudes and there's nothing you can do about it.
Sure.
And then there won't be any change. So for me, I feel it's important to participate and be a part of that and create the change that you want instead of just leaving it for whatever it is. And I was really relieved afterwards. I did not understand until it was over with how tense I was. It was huge for me, and I wasn't even there.
Well, and I'm curious. So I thought the hosts were handed a dog's dinner, and they did the best they possibly could with it. And I thought they were very entertaining. And Connie Willis is fantastic. And so was Robert Silverberg. I thought they both did wonderful jobs. And kind of, again, it was like Stina said, it was a difficult situation. And they, I think they did a great job and kind of brought us all through it. I'm curious to know how, you know, like reactions outside. Paul, were you tracking it? Were you paying attention?
Anyone who followed me on Twitter knew I've been tracking this whole thing ever since the nominations were released.
Well, just so you understand, I was having a hard time with my phone because I kept getting texts from a certain DiNardo.
Oh, don't.
Going, oh my God, such and such. Oh, da, da, da. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So yeah, I've been tracking this assiduously, and when I saw that Wes won the Campbell, I thought, okay, I think it's going to be okay.
Now, I do actually have a problem with that.
Okay.
Because I spoke with Wes afterwards, and he wasn't wearing the tiara. And I told him that the rules specifically... the diadem, whatever. I told him that the rules specifically state that he must wear it every day for the entire 365 days, no matter what, even in the shower.
Yeah, I think that's true. He has to forfeit it now.
And the look he gave me could be conveyed really with a finger.
Wow. Yeah.
And then he started laughing.
I love Wes.
Wes is great.
Go ahead, Paul.
So yeah, when I saw that Wes won the Campbell, I thought, okay, I think the voting's going to be okay because he was up against basically puppy nominees otherwise, and since he won, I was thinking, okay, the voting looks all right. And then when I saw the dominoes fall with the no awards, I said, yep, SSF fandom has decided that slating is okay, I won't say that word, is crap, and the fans spoke, and I was one of them. I confess I did read all the puppy nominees. God bless my lost brain cells for that. I've lost more brain cells with alcohol than with this, although I'd have to check and see if it might be close to a tie. But then, of course, the aftermath. Are we going to get into the aftermath of the Hugos, or should we just talk about the Hugos right now?
Just talk about the Hugos for a second.
Okay, so I'm...
I have other stuff I want to talk about,
okay,
too.
Okay, so the three-party problem was, I thought, was a... It wasn't my first choice, but it's a solid choice. I'm very happy for the other categories that did get winners downstream. And, yeah, so...
Well, I did think it was funny when David said on stage, please, please, please let there be some winners.
Yeah. It could have been very bad if everything had gone into the toilet.
Well, and JT sitting next to me, who was a newbie, and he's like, oh, there's only one person standing up there with a Hugo. So that tells you who, you know, like on some of the multi-group ones, that tells you that it's going to be, you know, a one-person winner. And I'm like, no, dude, that's not how it works.
No, it's not how it works.
They do that on purpose so you don't guess.
I was at the Hugos last year. So, yeah, so I got a front row seat for this whole shindig and how it works. So I'm very happy for winners like Galactic Suburbia and and Three Body Problem and the other winners, and the categories that no awarded, I think were no awarded fairly and rightly.
Well, I expected some no award. I didn't expect five.
It was quite the sweep. I thought that maybe something might squeak through, but apparently not. I didn't expect the long poem editor to go no award, to be honest. I thought somebody, maybe Tony, would get that, but Apparently, when you put up a slate and dominate the nominations, people react badly to that.
Correct.
Who knew?
Who knew? Who knew? Well, actually, sidebar. Actually, I think in their heart of hearts that some of the puppies believe that, okay, if the stuff on the ballot, something has to win. I don't think they actually quite realize that they could be so shut down or that people would shut them down. So I think they figured, okay, we have a whole category. One of them has to win, right? No, that's not how the rules work. And this year's Hugo's proved it.
Anthony, were you paying attention at all to the Hugo's? Did it matter to you?
I mean, it mattered in the sense that it's, you know, a big deal to the community. But as far as, like, actually watching the award ceremony and everything, no. I was up in the mountains. But it was interesting to come back and see. Because, like, what Stina was saying, it's frustrating to have such a small minority of people take over and be so vocal and make people feel like they're pushing them out, like there's no room for them. So, you know, like women writers or, you know, minority writers and, you know, the diversity that we seek as a community. I think it was really good to see kind of get voted through to say like, oh, no, we're not going to put up with the alternative, the status quo that you guys are trying to push down. So that was good to see.
So you're talking about not watching the ceremony. I was a little nervous about watching the ceremony because last year when I was watching the ceremony, my mom broke her leg in two places and dislocated her ankle.
What?
So
Yikes.
I was
scarred.
I was thinking about this and a joke that my uncle told one time. He said Bubba was talking to his uncle about vacations, and he said, you know, 3 years ago I took a vacation and while on vacation my wife got pregnant. 2 years ago went on vacation and while on vacation my wife got pregnant. Last year while on vacation my wife got pregnant. So this year I'm taking her with me.
I get it. And
I was thinking about that. I was like, dang, if mom broke her leg in two places last year and dislocated her ankle, what the hell's going to happen this year if I'm watching the Hugos? So, but I was a little bit nervous about that. But nothing bad happened.
Did you get pregnant?
No, I did not get pregnant, at least not that I know of. Sarah, were you paying attention or were you so busy with other stuff that this just didn't matter to you at all?
No, I actually was paying attention. I was up that night with the child and I watched the whole ceremony.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was, but
did you see me waving in the crowd?
No.
Oh.
No, but for me, it was a little bit different because my pregnancy was so high risk that it kind of dominated all my attention. So when this whole Hugo thing entered my focus, it was a very narrow focus, if that makes sense.
It does.
When I had health problems, I prioritized things, and this was way low on my list. But for me, I was very frustrated. I'm just a distributor, so I'm not an author, so my take is different. But I don't like being told what books I should enjoy and what books deserve to be nominated for what award. And that's kind of what I felt like was going on with this. So automatically my hackles were up. But with the Hugo ceremony, first of all, I've got to hand it to the people who were handing out awards, because they did a great job, and that would have been awful to have that job. But it surprised me. I was actually quite pleased that the no awards got no awarded. I was hoping for something like that to happen, and I'm glad it did. I'm glad that the community kind of stood up and said, okay, this isn't okay, because it's not okay to tell people who to vote for. For me, it felt like cheating on a test.
For me, it felt like a Chicago election, but.
It's not okay. No matter what your reasons are, it's still cheating on a test. I don't know. That's just what it felt like to me, and it kind of offended me.
Well,
there were points leading up to the ceremony that I just didn't even want to interact with the community because things got so ugly, and people stopped caring about books, and the only thing that people cared about was swearing at this person, that person, and the other person, and let's all hate everybody else. And that's not what the community's ever been about for me. And we lost something huge there.
We did.
And it, Yeah, and for me, who takes huge solace in the community, it felt, like you said, exactly like my parents are going through a divorce, and I'm the one stuck in the middle. You can't just love a book anymore because every book says something.
Has anybody noticed that we haven't done a panel in a long time?
Yep.
Yes.
So it took DiNardo basically telling me that I needed to do one to come back and start doing them again, because I think I took the entire thing horribly, horribly personally, and I really did feel like a kid going through a bad divorce. I felt horrible, and I was not happy with the community as a whole, and because there was so much fighting and so much bickering and so much back and forth, and it just really hurt.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to do it anymore.
See, regardless of what my personal politics are, I think there is a place for conservatism in SF. Honestly, I really do. So I don't understand why anyone who feels that... I just don't understand this whole thing where sci-fi has to be this one way. I mean, for me, the beauty of sci-fi is that it's all-encompassing. You can have all sorts of different ideas are represented, and it's okay to have any of them. Seriously, that's how it needs to be in order to be a vital genre. If we start determining in every detail exactly precisely what, and it can only be this one thing, that's to me spells the death of the genre, and that's bad. So
You have someone like Sarah, you talk about not being an author, but you are still, you're a huge voice in this community because you read so much.
Absolutely.
And you impact people.
And that whole your column, it's very important, Sarah. Very important.
Thank you. And Sarah, how old is the younger one now?
The youngest one is 2 weeks old.
2 weeks old. And how many books has she read so far?
she's ahead of me already, isn't she? Yeah.
Well, actually, you should probably ask her how many books she's eaten so far.
Yeah.
How many she's reviewed.
That would be more accurate.
So I want to move on. I'm going to go down the list real quick and see, does anybody else have anything they want to say about this before we get going? Gail, do you have anything else you want to add?
Not really. I question the relevance of the Hugos in general.
Sure.
So.
Sure.
I mean, I pretty much checked out the moment that Harlan Ellison grabbed Connie Willis on stage that one time. Mm-hmm. And I was just young enough to be badly affected by it. Although I pretty much hope everybody was. And I was like, oh, the Hugos are never going to include me. So that was the moment where I was like, this is not about me or anything that I care to talk about or represent. So I've never been particularly interested. So, I mean, it was a nice kerfuffle.
Sure, sure.
So there's the drama of it. But I wasn't particularly impacted because I don't find them particularly meaningful for me or my identity. That was kind of my attitude.
Okay.
The other thing that I think has been interesting in the debate and not really dealt with that much is the perspective of somebody entirely outside of genre, who's my partner, who's a politics major. And when I was explaining the whole situation, came up with the rather delicious gem of, so you pay to vote, then it's not a democracy. And that's kind of also where I was coming down on the whole thing.
So he's not wrong. And I think that can be a barrier to some people, and that could be why people don't vote, is because, I mean, WorldCon is expensive. You know, even like this year, I did two roommates, and it was still expensive. You know, and years past when I've gone, it's been easily $1,200.
Patrick, did you just say you did two roommates?
I had two roommates. Thank you.
Semantics.
So yes, I appreciate that. But it can be very expensive, and I think that can be a barrier. And so you do get a certain,
self-selecting set.
Yes, there you go. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, and I don't think it can be a barrier. I think it is a barrier.
Well, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you're right.
I think Gail's point is excessively valid.
Yeah.
Very valid. But I don't feel like that negates the entire thing. But that's me personally.
Sure.
But I feel Gail's position is valid.
Well, yeah. You know, you feel the way you feel, right? I mean, everybody feels the way they feel, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Alvaro, how about you? Any other thoughts on this?
I mean, I'd just say that for a long time, a lot of the things that I've nominated, actually, just about everything that I've nominated hasn't even made it onto the final ballot. But it's not because it was things that matched the types of stuff that were on the recommended slates, the puppy slates.
Mm.
So, you know, to Gail's point, I never really feel like the works that speak to me from an aesthetic perspective that I would like to see rewarded and put out there and promoted in some fashion, they weren't really winning Hugos in the first place. So I'm not sure that I was.
But you were nominating them. You were nominating them.
I was nominating them, and
that's the point that I've always made on this show, is that if you don't feel like what you like is being represented, you do have the ability to nominate and at least try.
Right.
But I don't advocate like 25 people getting together and all nominating the same thing. I'm just saying that, you know, each individual can get out there and nominate and vote. And it does matter. We proved, I think, this year that it matters.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think, you know, involvement is definitely good in this particular instance. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot more people that nominate. Hopefully next year you may get more of a mix.
Exactly.
And even if there are slates, you may get one or two things from the slates that make it on there, not because they were on the slates, just because other people voted for them as well.
Gotcha. Anthony, how about you?
Yeah, I don't know. This the whole conversation has been going on for so long now. It feels like...
Well, this is the coda, so go ahead.
No.
I mean the whole thing. This is the coda.
Yeah. I mean, in like the months that have run up to this, and I feel like it was this group of people that I could sympathize with their perspective and what they saw as like these slights against them in the voting situation. Cause the voting system is, you know, has been pointed out is inherently flawed in a lot of ways, but, it'll be interesting to see.
There's something new coming down the pike. Go ahead.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see in the future, like how the system evolves and changes to adapt to this, you know, what we've seen this last year. But I think in the last, you know, since the Hugos, it's been really interesting hearing, still people talking about how, you know, from the other side about how they're still claiming victory in a lot of situations and being like, oh, this is still a win. And it's, I don't know, it's kind of like playing, I don't know, tag football with a kid who refuses to acknowledge that he's been tagged, you know, and he just keeps running with the ball. And you're like, no, you're down back here. So I don't know. They just keep changing the rules to fit their you know, agenda and saying, oh, no, we actually won.
Of
like,
course.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, so. And there are actually two rules changes that I wanted to see happen. One is that the business meeting can never be before 1 p.m. And two, that you can never put a Hugo nominee on a Sunday morning panel.
Oh.
Amen.
True character test.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Paul, final thoughts on the Hugos?
This build up in the Hugo nominations broke me with a lot of fandom. I took this, like you, Patrick, very personally and very badly. When people say I dream of putting them in boxcars and shipping them off, or that I should be compared to Hitler and Goebbels, I take it very, very, very badly. I am a bridge builder. I try to make friends with everybody. You all know that. But when you try to burn down every beeping bridge I build, I just can't build the bridges anymore.
And those are horrible, horrible, you know, parallels to be drawing. Like, I think I know what you're referencing, and it's, you know, that's just inappropriate.
I agree.
So inappropriate.
Yep.
But those are the type of people, you know, for the, you know, that subset that you're trying to deal with, and it's hard to argue with them in a logical, reason-based way.
You also have to realize that there are some people, and in radio they're called shock jocks, and they just say they say whatever. And there are some people within the community, not part of this subset, who do the same thing and run blogs and love to basically sensationalize things in order to get traffic to their websites.
Yeah.
But with the leaders of the puppies themselves, not just an average puppy that I could ignore. And once the leaders, it's like, okay then.
Sure, but I can also point to other people that aren't puppies who do the same shit.
Yeah.
And sensationalize and go out there. And there are authors that I've spoken to who are deathly afraid of these people because they don't want to piss them off, because they don't want to get on bad lists or have them be on these blogs and websites being trashed.
Sure.
So there's just people who do that shit. And that
pisses some people just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we need to be careful when we're having this conversation. When we start using phrases like these types of people, that's a very difficult or problematic statement to make.
I'm equating them to shock jocks. Yeah. I'm equating it to shock jocks. That's what I'm talking about.
So recent example, Terry Pratchett was really pretty mediocre. He's not a literary genius at all.
That would fall in that category. Yeah.
Exactly. That's a shock jock writing something to sensationalize and try to drive traffic.
And it worked.
And it worked. And people are talking about it like crazy. Yes. Sarah?
Yeah. Let me think. But, you know, thinking and crap. The thing that I think bothered me the most about this is the community has room for everybody. And I think it needs everybody. There's a place and, you know, sometimes I want to read certain things, but what's really bothered me is how divided everyone's become. It's a total war. And for a lot of reviewers like myself, I feel like I'm stuck right in the middle of things because I'm getting email and communications from both sides. And most of them have ended up not being very nice. And it's just become very difficult. And I lament the fact that something as trivial as an award is totally dividing a community that is, I mean, come on, there's fundraisers people do to help people who have been affected by hurricanes. When my husband lost work, the community came out in droves to help my family out so we wouldn't be homeless. This community has been incredible, and a stupid award has ripped it apart, and that pisses me off. And I hope that it doesn't continue like that. I hope that we can get over this and then move on and be adults, because for God's sake, we're not on the playground. But, you know, whatever. So that's my final thought. That's it.
Well said. Well said. So I want to get into something happy. I want to talk about something positive to kind of end the show. So the other topic that I threw out there was up and coming authors that we should be reading. So let's go through that a little bit, and let's give some, you know, put some positive vibes out there in the universe. Sarah, do you have some up and coming authors that you'd like people to read?
I do. This is another one where I've been pregnant and it's been hard. So I am not as up to date on this as I should be or usually am. But I just read the book Last Song Before Night.
Took my pick.
How come I knew that was going to happen? It is so good.
And who's
she's
it by?
I don't want to say her name because I know I'm going to hash it.
Ilana
Meyer. Okay, that's how I was going to say it. But it's really good. Very well written. Fantastic story. Very engrossing. It's her debut, and it's you should definitely check it out.
Awesome. Any other?
I sat her at the Locust table, and she's also super nice.
She is very nice. Let's see. The other one that I was going to mention is probably on other lists, and I apologize, but I'm going to mention Updraft by Fran Wild.
Stole another one.
Stole mine.
I love going first.
Paul hates other people going first.
It's really phenomenal. On the world building. It's another really engrossing story, but what really got me about it was that one of the most unique world building experiences I've ever, it's quite good. And I didn't want to read it at first because I didn't think I'd care, but I started it and I finished it in like a day and a half because I couldn't put it down. So there you go.
Well, and I got to interview Fran at Worldcon for Functional Nerds. So there's going to be an interview going up over there with her. And she was just wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
She's really nice.
Oh yeah. And she's a geek mom.
Oh nice.
So you could go check her out on Geek Mom too. Alrighty, let's go to. Oh, if I don't do it, he's just gonna keep saying that was on my list, Paul.
No. Okay. Well, in addition to Alana and Fran, a novelist who has a novel coming out this November that I liked is Shards of Heaven by Michael Livingston.
Okay.
I wasn't expecting this book. I got it in the mail from Tor. Yay, Tor! And it's alternate magical fantasy history set around the conflict between Octavian and Mark Antony in 31 BC. It's got magic. It's got excellent characters. It has two characters whose names will be familiar to anybody who's seen the TV show Rome, although they are different people in this novel.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
No.
No.
Titus and my brain just went gone. Anyway, the two centurions from Rome are in this novel.
Nice.
So they are slightly different characters. They have slightly different arcs. But yeah, it's when I just sort of was like, oh yeah, I remember them. And the reason why they're in here and also in the show is because they're actually named by Caesar in his Gallic Wars. So we know they're real people. We know Lucius and Titus are real people. So they show up in here. Other characters show up like Cleopatra. It's an interesting mix of fantasy and history, and I liked it a lot, and I think it's going to be a novel people are going to watch.
Who was the author again?
Michael Livingston.
Michael Livingston.
Yep.
Do you have another one?
From up and coming? No, I have more for the second category because I had Fran and I had Alana for up and coming. And,
okay, that's fine.
Okay. Oh, actually, I do have another one. I mean, she her novels were finally started published this year. Carrie Patel. Carrie Patel has two novels with Angry Robot Books. That would be The Buried City and Cities and Thrones. They're kind of weird, new weird, steampunky, post-apocalyptic novels involving intrigue and mysteries in cities that are built underground. And they're very atmospheric and very interesting.
Cool. And you know I don't do well with the weird.
I know. Those are not for you, Patrick. But that's okay.
That's cool. Two's good for now. Anthony, how about you?
Well, I know I'm jumping on like the sinking ship of having choosing Fran, but Updraft is really good.
Good.
So I'll throw my hat in that one again. But okay. I was just reading Mort by Robert Rapino, and it's about a sentient house cat mercenary killer in the war against these ants, sentient ants. And I don't know, it's really well written, really good. I've been enjoying that quite a bit.
Awesome.
Another guy, he's a self-published kid, Ernie Lewis. He wrote The Kill Switch and the Alternate series. And he's mostly just been writing short stories, but they're really good. They're the type of stuff where I read it and I think, man, I wish I had written that. which I think is the highest praise I have to give.
Gotcha. Stina, how about you?
I've been involved in a book launch, so I haven't been paying as close of attention as I would have liked. But the only one that I had to bring up was Fran Wild.
That's okay. You know what? She was making the rounds at Worldcon. She really was. And she's just a wonderful, wonderful person. And I really enjoyed chatting with her. And she was so excited about her book. So excited.
I'm so glad for her. I really am. I'm very happy for her.
That's awesome. Gail, how about you?
Yes, I actually admire her as well. although I haven't had a chance to read her book, but I was definitely intrigued by it. I think she's probably one to watch. Who else did I put? I put indie author named Nikki Wolfolk down on my list, and that's W-O-O-L-F-O-L-K, like wool and folk, as in folk music, crammed okay. together. Her first book is called The Winter Triangle. It's kind of an alternate history, American West, with some heavy-duty steampunk elements, but it's really more of a kind of thought experiment study on what would happen if women were in power and the slavery had revolted much, much earlier and the whole dynamic of culture was shifted. But it's really fun and really light and a really great adventure as well. So that's the first in a couple of series set in her strange alternate universe, and I thought it was fascinating.
Awesome.
And then I also think one to watch is another indie author named Starla Hutchin, H-U-C-T-O-N. She has a new series in an existing universe coming out, but the new series is a little bit more like older young adult, new adult, and they're a superhero series. And I know it's sort of a disregarded genre in traditional publishing at the moment, but I think that there are a lot of indie authors doing really fun stuff with it out there, and I think she's kind of spearheading that charge. So awesome. I'm excited to read her new book. So those are my two.
Awesome. Alvaro.
So on the novel front, I'm going to throw out The Trader, Baru Cormorant, but Seth Dickinson.
Oh, we're reading that right now.
What was it again? The Trader?
Baru Cormorant, B-A-R-U, and then the second word is C-O-R-M-O-R-A-N-T.
Yeah, I think I got that. Someone sent that to me.
I had the pleasure of interviewing him because I do interviews for Clark's World, and it was actually in a roundtable that I think was published last month about video game writing, because he has a lot of knowledge and history writing for video games as well. Mm-hmm. So on the novel front, I think that's a good one. And other things that I'm excited about, I actually wanted to mention a couple of short fiction writers, because I feel like, though they're not necessarily up and coming, people who only typically publish short stories are just not that well known.
Sure,
and
sure.
I'm going to throw out three names, short story writers that I really like. The first one is A.C. Wise, who in fact has also written for SF Signals. She has a column mm-hmm. on women to read, which I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's penned some short stories recently that I've really found myself getting into.
Were they about witchcrafts and satyrs?
Well, actually, her most recent story is The Practical Witch's Guide to Acquiring Real Estate.
Nice.
So, sorta. And she had a story called Silver Buttons All Down His Back, which I thought was quite effective. And anyway, you can look up her bibliography. She's quite prolific. The second one is Caroline M. Joachim, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. She's also quite a prolific short story writer. Season Set in Skin, Dancing with Fire, Goodbye First Love. Those are some recent stories by her that I thought were effective.
Okay, so I just need to throw it out there for all of y'all. I grew up in Fresno. You need to give me names I can spell.
You want me to spell out her name?
Her last name.
It's Y-O-A-C-H-I-M.
Thank you.
Next. And last but certainly not least, Marissa Lingen. Very prolific short story writer as well. I don't know, I think she's published 5 or 6 stories already this year. And I love the range of these three writers, by the way. You can never be sure exactly what you're going to expect. And when it comes to short stories, I love that feeling of excitement and uncertainty. Some of her recent stories are Out of the Rose Hills, It Brought Us All Together, Surfacing.
Yeah, she's local to me. She's good for people.
I don't know about people who are local to you.
Well, if they can stand to be living close to me, they have to be good people, Patrick.
So, I have a question. Would you consider, and I'm not going to be able to pronounce her name, so Gail?
Yes.
It's a French name.
Yes.
Aliette.
De
Bodar.
Bodar.
Yeah.
How do you say it in real?
Aliette de Bodar, I think, but I'm not sure.
We consider her up and coming. She's got the new book, The House of Shattered Wings.
I'd consider her up and coming, yeah.
Yeah, and she, again, was just incredibly vivacious and fun, and she was so excited about her book. She hadn't even seen it yet. And people were getting ARCs at WorldCon, I guess.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
So she was just so excited, and it's this Paris was destroyed by magic, like a magic A-bomb kind of thing. and there's just all this stuff going on. It's just, it looked amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. I really want to read that one.
It's on my list of books I was going to talk about. It is amazing.
I've read it. It's really good.
Awesome. Well, she's another one that I got to interview. And like I said, so fun, so excited about her new book and just running around telling everybody about it. And her excitement and enthusiasm was infectious, you know, and I think everybody that she talked to was touched by it and just got excited too. So
in that vein, I thought the boys, and it was mostly the boys at Wordfire Press, seemed to be having an equally enthusiastic good time. So,
and did you meet them all, Gail?
I met most of them. Yeah.
Did you meet the actor?
He's so cute. Oh my God. I kept joking. I kept hanging out there so much, just chatting with them because I was in the dealer's room all the time. That I was like, I should be your booth babe, but I think they already had a booth babe.
he is an actor. He was dressed very, very, very nicely.
Beautifully dressed. Oh my goodness.
And he's like Wes in that because he's an actor, he just has that ability to project and be
charismatic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and I'm gonna get in so much trouble because I'm blanking on his name. I keep wanting to call him the Leviathan because he was a Leviathan on Supernatural, among other things. He was also on the 100. He's been on a bunch of different shows, and he wrote a book, and Wordfire published it. Was it Anton?
I'm sorry, I don't remember either.
You were too busy admiring the poor boy.
The suit, yeah.
Yes. So yeah, they definitely had a presence, and they were very bombacious. They're out there, bombastic, whatever, and talking to people and pushing books, and it was hilarious because that's actually Kevin J. Anderson's imprint.
Yeah, they were just really livening up their corner, and it was a corner. And it was kind of, I don't know. It's just nice to see people. Because I feel like everything that was going on at Worldcon this year kind of dragged the energy level down in general, and it was just real those few people that were just bright, shiny, chipper star. I mean, I met this sort of sweet guy just hanging out with the authors at the bar. Wasn't an author, just a sort of a mover and a shaker who'd driven down from Canada, and he was just so excited to be there. It was his first Worldcon, and I was like, I kind of just gravitated towards him because he was so excited to be there. That those people added, I think, so much to the experience for the rest of us who are a little drawn and exhausted. So,
and yeah. Sarah and Paul, you might know who we're talking about. We're talking about Alec Ristia.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And he had so much fun. He really did. He had a blast. And the Wordfire folks, Josh Vogt is one of them, and he was back there, and he, you know, he was talking to people. He always has good energy. All of them did. And actually, Gail, on the last day, I walked over there to talk to him, and Kevin J. Anderson walked up and was behind the booth there and was signing books or something. And I said very loudly to Josh, "Hey, Josh, I'm here for the special deal you told me about where I could buy one of every book on the table for a dollar." And you want to talk about a publisher's head snapping up? And he looked up and he looked at me and he recognized me and he said, "You can have all of Josh's book for a dollar."
Oh, poor Josh.
Were you guys talking about RJ Terrell before the actor's name?
No. I can actually probably look him up. He's Antoine or oh my gosh, he's gonna be so pissed at me now.
He was on Supernatural, Arrow, and iZombie?
No, he's been on Supernatural, the 100.
Ah.
And let's see. Can probably look him up here. Yeah, this is great. This is good podcasting right here.
I didn't mean to sidetrack you, Patrick.
No, it's okay.
Well, can I talk about a book while you
absolutely
do that?
Yes, go for it.
Yeah, because I really feel like whether or not this is true, but I honestly begin to feel like women only get talked about, their books only get talked about when they're new.
Really?
Yeah, it's what I've started noticing. It's like you are a big deal when you debut, and then suddenly you're invisible. But I wanted to talk about The Red by Linda Nakata.
Please do.
I really liked it. I really did. It's a great book. It's fun. I don't know. I like
it's smart. It's smart. It's intelligent.
I really liked it. I really, really did. And I feel it, that I just want to talk that up. I think it needs to be talked up.
It's a really smart take on AI.
When she touched on the subject of the filter bubble, that one really, it just, because that was something that I've been thinking about for quite a while. Everybody here knows what that is, right?
Say that again.
A filter bubble?
A filter bubble. No.
You're going to need an explanation.
Okay. So a filter bubble is something where, you know how Google, when you make certain searches, it personalizes things for you?
Sure.
Yeah.
And how the internet is suddenly very personalized for you. So it only shows you stories that, you know, if you, for example, are quite obviously looking up articles that are of a liberal bent, it will automatically only show you articles that have a liberal bent. And so over time, you get a certain limited perspective of reality as an end result of it. That's a filter bubble.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens if you have the conservative end of it too. And anyway, she was going on about how this was detrimental to humanity at large, really. And I agree. And it's very limiting creatively. But in any case, it's a very interesting point in the book. When she did that, I wanted to scream, yay.
I get what you're saying, because I actually, for my day job in marketing, I have to maintain a cookie-free browser so that I can look certain things up and not get them filtered.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because that is something that I've tried to teach people, especially at work, is that Google is now delivering personalized results. So it is entirely possible for you to never see anything outside your bubble.
Yeah, and this is a bad thing, because it's a known thing that is bad, that we've known about as far as media and news goes. We've known about this since like the turn of the century, that this is a bad thing.
It goes a little bit further, too, if we look at Facebook, for instance, where certain people, you'll be friends with them, but the materials that they're putting out there aren't popping up because Facebook's algorithm decides, you're not going to be interested in that. So even though you're friends with somebody, you might never, ever get to see or engage with them on there. So
right. And here's a trick if you're doing a Kickstarter. If you're doing a Kickstarter, write a post about it, but don't do a link in the post. Just talk about your Kickstarter. And then because there's no link, Facebook will show it to more people.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And then in your comments, leave yourself a comment with the link to the Kickstarter.
Oh,
that's a good one.
Look at you hacking the system.
Clever.
Bursting that bubble.
Ramon was his name. It's RJ Terrell. Did someone say RJ Terrell?
Yeah, that was me.
Okay, that was you. So that is, but he wasn't going by RJ. He was going by Ramon.
Gotcha.
So, but that's him. Ramon, like Alvaro.
Like Lazo Ramon? Yeah. Oh, wait.
So, I think we did a good job of throwing out some positive stuff here today, and including the all the books and authors. Who was the author again, Stina? That you just
Linda threw Nagata.
Out? Linda Nagata. Okay. I just want to make sure. I wrote down the book title, but I didn't write down the name. Nagata. Alrighty. So, I think that this has been a super long episode, and we should probably start letting people go. What do you think?
What about the things we were excited to share?
Do you want to talk about the things you're excited to share? I mean, it's been a long episode, but I'm totally willing to let you if you want to. So who said that? Was that Anthony?
We can be fast.
I'm down. Yeah. I'm down.
Okay, so was that Anthony that said something first?
No, that was me, Alvaro.
No, that was Alvaro.
Alvaro, say it. What this is the things in science fiction and fantasy that you can't stop telling people about and why. Go.
Michael Dearda's most recent collection of essays called Browsings.
Okay.
I always joke that when you buy a book by Michael Dearda, even if you get the paperback, it costs you like $1,000 because of all the books that you then end up buying that he recommends that you really want to read.
and how do you spell his last name?
D-I-R-D-A.
See, I screwed it up. Okay. And this is a collection?
This is a collection of essays that he wrote weekly for, I believe it was the, it was an online, venue. And so he collected these. He was writing them once a week.
Okay.
Just found out about this today, but this was posted by Jeffrey Ford. I trust his judgment implicitly, and I wanted to just be able to say the title because I thought it was so cool. A book by an author named Carlos Hernandez, and the book is called The Assimilated Cuban's Guide to Quantum Santeria.
Wow.
Cool.
That's coming out in January 2016, so I wanted to get that out there.
Well, then.
Really?
And I also want to mention an anthology that came out not so long ago by Jeff and Ann Vandermeer, Sisters of the Revolution. A lot of great short fiction. I reviewed that for Intergalactic Medicine Show, and I recommend that as well.
Very cool. Stina, how about you?
I'm reading The Darkest Part of the Forest by Holly Black, and I really love it. I love Holly Black. I love her work so much. I think she's an amazing writer. She's my favorite YA writer of all time.
Cool.
When Holly isn't my favorite writer, YA writer of all time, I love Libba Bray. and Libba's come out with a new book, and I'm very excited about getting a hold of a copy of it, and I desperately want to read it. So, and I was trying to look up the title, and shit, hang on just a second.
Wow, that's a pretty controversial title.
Follow up to the Diviners or the
Yes, it's Lair of Dreams.
Lair of Dreams.
Yes. Okay. I'm very excited about reading that because it's Evie O'Neill and I really love her. Well, I don't love her as much as I do some other characters, but gotcha. Yeah, I like that series a lot.
Gail, how about you?
Well, I'm going to throw out Court of Fives by Kate Elliott. Which...
Stole another one!
Sorry. You do it too.
Did anybody happen to see that I got a selfie with Kate Elliott and I died?
Cool. I rarely pimp a book as hardcore as I have pimped this book because I love it. So I haven't felt this way about a book since I first read Tamar Pierce in high school. It's so good. And, disregard any like Hunger Games references or anything like that. It's this just fantastic alternate history set in Roman-occupied Egypt or something very similar with these sort of Olympic-style Spartan games that you can kind of disguise yourself in order to play, and wow. The main character does, and it all ties to the history of the city, and she has this very complicated family life, and and it's just genius, and I think Kate's voice is incredibly well-suited to being as tight and as tailored as you have to be for young adult lit, and so for me, this is her best book. And I'm suffering under the yoke of having to wait until the next one comes, which makes me for the first time in a long time sympathetic with some of my readers. I cannot say enough good things about this book. I just adored it. So
that's
everyone
awesome.
Should read this book. Everyone.
That's awesome. Did you have anything else, Gail, or was that the only one?
That was my big one this is sort of slightly off base, but given some of the conversation we've been having, perhaps not. I want to throw out a podcast, which is called, I just discovered it. It's relatively new. It's called The Sewers of Paris, and it's essentially interviews with gay men. I think that we might get some lesbians eventually, but it's mostly gay men talking about coming out at different times in history and the sort of pop culture that informed their identity. And sometimes it's writing and science fiction and fantasy, and sometimes it's music or whatever. And it's just, I don't know, as a writer, I find the storytelling aspect very, very fascinating and interesting. And I think it's a nice window into different parts of the world, being gay in different parts of the world and things like that. So it's a really fascinating podcast and very well produced. So I highly recommend it.
That sounds awesome. And I'm happy to hear that there is a second podcast out there now. That's really cool.
This newfangled trend is finally catching on.
Anthony, how about you?
Well, I kind of misunderstood the question.
Okay.
But so I went with what I am excited to read in the near future.
That's okay.
So Binti from Netty.
Yes.
I'm so excited for that.
Me too.
It's coming out through Tor's Novella imprint or what? And
oh, Tor.com.
Just, yeah, yeah. And I'm Lee just Harris. So excited for that.
Lee Harris is Tor.com.
Yep, that's the one.
Yeah, because apparently he has to say it's from... It's like me with Kirkus. He has to say that it is Tor.com. He can't just say Tor.
Oh, really?
I can't say Kirkus. I have to say Kirkus Reviews Blog.
Well, there you go. Yeah, but I'm really excited for that. Daredevil Season 2, whenever that finally comes out. Can't wait for that.
Mm-hmm.
But
I hear Constantine's going to be on.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes. They're going to bring Constantine back, which is cool. And does anybody care about Supergirl?
Nah.
Crickets.
And I hope it's good.
Does anybody care about Vixen? Crickets. Okay.
A lot of crickets in here.
Yeah. Paul, how about you?
Okay, in addition to House of Shattered Wings and Court of Fives and Updraft.
You know, it doesn't have to be a book.
I know, but books are one of the things I do. So coming in October is Silver on the Road by Laura Ann Gilman. I begged and pleaded to get a very early before art copy of this, and I loved it. And I can't wait for everybody to read it as well. Laura Ann Gilman levels up and does weird Western with the devil running a large chunk of the Wild West and a young woman who decides she wants to be the devil's left hand. And it's awesomely good, and you will all read it and love it.
Very cool.
That's high price.
Yay!
Sarah, how about you? Or Paul, were you done? I'm sorry.
Also, the review's already on SF Signal, but Bradley Beaulieu's 12 Kings and Sharakai is a leveling up for him. He has taken his epic fantasy chops from the Winds of Kalakaro series and now transferred them and leveled them up into a wonderful desert city with an excellent heroine.
Very cool. Sarah.
Oh, dude, I just had a baby 2 weeks ago, and I'm running on, like, 3 minutes of sleep. So
you're excited about sleep.
What excites me right now is my husband just walked in here and said that my 4-year-old went to bed at 7:30, and I'm, like, passing out with sleep. So there you go.
That's awesome.
That's the little thing.
My excitement right now.
And when your 4-year-old wakes up at 1 a.m.,
oh, God, don't even.
No. Patrick.
So, you know what? Sarah has mentioned several times that there are a couple of cons up in her neck of the woods, and she doesn't live that far from me, really, and has said that I should come up there at some time and say hello. And now that she has two, I probably will go up there, because one of my favorite things that I always get excited about is other people's kids and giving them Mountain Dew just before I leave.
Oh, God. You're never, ever going to meet my children. Ever. I will.
You're a terrible
thing. I will slap you so hard.
And then you complain about being punched.
It is over, dude. You're no longer my friend.
I did that to my brother one time. He's like, I don't understand why these kids are just running wild. I'm thinking, yeah, because they were running wild all over me all day long, and you deserve some, too.
No, that's war. I will buy some nukes and I will launch them at your house. That's serious.
That's not even an overreaction. That's fair.
Yeah, see, that's fair. I've got backers.
She's
dude.
She's justified in that.
I'm with Sarah. What can I say?
All right, folks. Well, this has been a really long show, but it's been a great show. I appreciate each and every one of you for taking the time to be here tonight. And we're going to start doing some more of these again. So,
something we're all excited about.
Yep, I've missed it. I'm glad that the panels are back.
Well, you can thank DiNardo because he talked me into it.
Okay, I will send him virtual bagels in appreciation.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Go check out Stina's books and her website. Go check out Gail's books and her website. Go read Prudence, goddammit. Go check out all of Alvaro's stuff. Anthony, I don't know if you've got stuff. Paul?
I got.
Anthony, what?
Oh, yeah. No, I got stuff.
You got stuff? Go check out Anthony's stuff. Go check out Paul's stuff. Go look at some of the stuff that Sarah's been posting and commiserate with her for not getting any sleep.
Yes, thank
word.
You.
Follow me on Twitter if you want to see Wednesday Doodles, ATFMB. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks,
Have
Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thanks for having me,
guys.
Thank you for listening to the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. Your host is Patrick Hester, an author, a blogger, and a functional nerd. His website is www.atfmb.com, which stands for All Things From My Brain. ATFMB is also his Twitter handle and where you can find him on Facebook. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the links to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends and have them tell their friends and so on and so on. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all of your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melds featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SF and F field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, fiction deals, movie reviews, videos, links and roundup posts, and more. Click the RSS button in the sidebar of your browser to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
It's like talking to a child.
Magic Wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
I don't even know what the horseman is.
And scene, you bastard.